Access All Areas on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Access All Areas. I'm Stephen Lang.
And I'm Bobby Norris. Babe, I'm living for the new intro.
Well, I mean, it makes all the difference, doesn't it? It's like a whole new show. Have you got a bit of a sore throat, Bob? You sound a bit ropey.
I have. I've lost my voice a little bit. I'm on the honey and lemon.
Okay,
but it's all good. I think there's a lot of it going around. It's not COVID, completely tested, but just a little bit of a sore throat. So if my voice goes up and down a little bit, it is
squeaking like a 14-year-old is.
Yeah, and then I can go incredibly deep, probably in about 7 minutes. So you're going to get a right range. How's your week been?
Yeah, not bad. You say it every week, but weather makes a big difference, doesn't it? And
The
clock's going back last weekend. That's been really nice. So I've been having some little like early evening walks and stuff if I'm not meeting people or just chilling out. And yeah, it's just been pretty nice. I've actually been out quite a few times in the last couple of in the last week in Soho, like kind of randomly ended up going out all over Soho, which doesn't happen often. But when the weather's nice, you want to get those legs out and you want the boys to see it. Do you know what I mean?
You've been out painting the town crimson, Stephen.
Exactly. Yeah, I have. Which has actually been really nice, especially in the lovely weather. Just sort of, London has a whole different feel. It's been really nice.
Definitely. Like when the sun's out, it's just... I've driven past about four local pubs. They've got huge beer gardens and they're just ramo. People are like living for, they're out in the beer garden. They've got their drinks on the table. People have got a lot of making up to do, haven't they? Really wanted the weather as well.
Until basically today when it's absolutely fucking freezing cold. But that's fine. We live. We live and learn. We move on.
We move. Yeah, I was that guy yesterday that went to the gym in a vest and shorts. Ooh. When it was still hot. And I kind of thought, Bob, it's March. I've got a bit carried away. Kind of thought it was July for a split second. Very much realised today that it's not July. And was counting on the heat wave that's meant to be coming in April, but I've also read that might not be happening now. But what can we do?
Britain gives with one hand and takes with the other, doesn't it? So
exactly. You know. It's a cruel, cruel world.
Cruel world out there. That's what, exactly. Because it was all well and good me wearing shorts round and about in town until about 6 o'clock when suddenly the temperature plummets by 20 degrees and it's like -5 outside. And I'm like,
That's when you need your gym coat.
Yeah, it works. You know, it really does work. But all good other than that. Keeping busy at work, which is keeping on my toes as ever.
Good.
That's about it.
Oh, still a lot. Considering in a week, that's a lot. A few nights out in Soho. Did you do rowing Sunday?
No, I haven't been rowing in ages. Yeah, do you know what? Actually, my Mother's Day, I didn't see my mum this year, but I sent her... My mum's a big crafter. It's like a passion. So I sent her a bouquet of flowers. And with it, you could have the option to send a flower press thing so that you can then press the flowers that they have and turn them into something else. So I had a long conversation with her on Sunday, on Mothering Sunday, all about that, which was really nice.
I used to love a flower press when I was little.
All you have to do really is put it in a book, isn't it? I mean, like a heavy book.
I forgot they was ever invented. I loved that. And then sometimes I would make perfume. I thought I was like Chanel.
Willy Wonka.
I would tear the rose bush to bits. My mum weren't happy. And I thought I was like, making this amazing aftershave or perfume. It never ever turned out great.
No, I'm sure it just smelled like plant with a slight rose.
Yeah, it was grim and it used to go a terrible colour. But we've got to remember, this was a generation where there was no internet. We had to use our imagination. True. There was no iPhone or iPad to be scrolling through. It was either go and make some perfume or go and playing the straights.
Yeah, God, I mean, it seems quite retro now, doesn't it? But that's so true. I used to be obsessed with the Roald Dahl book, George's Marvelous Medicine.
Yes.
Do you know what I used to do? I feel terrible about it now. I'd basically go to, if I was bored, I don't even, go to the sink, put the plug in, and then just make my own medicine out of all the shit that was on like the side of the bath. But it would mean that then, like, I'd empty out half a shampoo bottle, just making something that would then pour down the sink. So my mum used to get absolutely furious when she realised what I'd done, because that's expensive. Do you know what I mean? Like,
adds up.
If you're having to buy a new bottle of shampoo every week because your son's pouring it straight down the sink, you would be very pissed off, wouldn't you? Well, what did you do for Mother's Day? Anything nice? I saw some pics on Instagram.
So yeah, well, I had a lovely weekend, thank you, babe. I had my friend Georgia Casolo's engagement party, like a little gathering. Mm-hmm. So we did that, I think that was Saturday night, which was lovely, except there were some people I've not seen since before COVID. Seen George, obviously, and a few of them, but yeah, a couple I've not seen for over 2 years. So it was just really, really lovely to celebrate with her. And then Sunday was with mum and the fam, ordered like a load of like afternoon tea stuff, which was really, really nice. And then I had a roast. So basically it was a day of, you could say, just indulging. I had
scoffing your face.
Completely scoffed my face. Cakes, scones, roast.
Ooh, lovely.
But you know where you're not even hungry halfway in, but you're just eating because it's
like
there.
Christmas Day. You're just in the gob.
Yeah, the it gob. Was one of them. Cookies I had. I mean, there wasn't a lot I didn't have. But no, really, really nice weekend. And obviously, clocks changing, having that little bit of extra, that extra hour makes such a difference with the light. So no, it's been really nice, thank you, babe. Really nice.
Gorge. Well, that's good to hear. But we have a very exciting show today. We have two returning guests, actually. Spoken to them both before. We have former Big Brother star turned, well, big time actor, I guess. He's now in a big film, Pete Bennett. Who's appearing in the Nan movie, Catherine Tate's latest film. He's coming up first. And then we have Jess Impiazzi, who's been on the show a couple of times, is a lovely gal, and she's got a new... Do I sound like you then, Bob? When I said
you did.
That?
You had a twang of Bobby then. I love it.
She's got a new podcast on to talk about and some other bits of work. So, yeah, so it should be a nice show.
Fab show. I'm looking forward to it, babes. But before we crack on with the guests, as we know, we all start with a little bit of showbiz news.
Mm-hmm.
What's caught your eye? Well, I think what's caught the world's eye, really.
Well,
we can't,
you say crack on.
It.
I mean, you could say smack on, really. Because it's, yeah, been this, like you said, the smack that's been heard around the world, I think. The Oscars being completely overshadowed by Will Smith smacking Chris Rock around the face.
What was your thoughts when you first did you first see it when you woke up and looked at your phone? Because obviously,
yeah,
with the time difference, we kind of all woke up over to it here, didn't we?
Yeah. So so Monday morning, I guess, wasn't it? I woke up and I saw it, and I watched the clip, and I was like, oh, it's a setup, like it's a joke.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, I thought it's like a bit, like a funny bit that they're doing, where he gets on stage, and then I heard him shouting to Chris Rock from off the stage, shouting something along the lines of like, keep my wife's name out of your fucking mouth. I was completely and utterly like perplexed, really, I think is probably a good word, like surprised and sort of perplexed. And yeah, not normal behavior that you'd expect from, well, he then went on to win an Oscar 10 minutes later. It's all very awkward, isn't it? I mean, like, what did you think?
Well, like you, when I first saw it, I woke up, looked at my phone, scrolling through social, and it was just everywhere. Like, there was no other post. It was just already memes had been made whilst he slept. And I thought, no, it's a joke. They've done like a little bit of a bantery thing.
Like a sketch, something.
Yeah, like a sketch or like and a PR-y thing. And then the more I looked at, because I've even had to watch the video a few times, at first I thought, I couldn't actually see if his hand was really hitting him.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, you can't really see it properly. You can see the before and after, but you don't actually see his hand like on his face. You don't see
the contact. So yeah. It's almost like an EastEnders slap, you know, like a Pat and Peggy kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And, he bit you cow.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly the slap I was thinking of. Iconic. And then when I started to, because then I thought, would they have? They would have surely said a few minutes later if it was like if it was a sketch.
Mm.
But it was just the tone of by the time he sat back in his chair, how he shouted back, but. I think what confused me as well was when I replayed it, for the split second when he first made the joke, I felt like he laughed, that he didn't seem angry for that split second, Will.
Oh, yeah, so you should probably explain, right? Like, he did the smack because Chris had made a joke about his wife's hair. Mm. She has alopecia. Chris says he didn't know that afterwards, but it just basically means she got a shaved head, right? So, yeah. So initially he laughed.
So yeah, there was that initial moment, and I think you could tell clearly from her reaction, she didn't find it funny.
No, she really didn't.
And the thing is, and I know, I think he's since said that he didn't know she had alopecia.
Mm.
And I think that's a huge part of it, because if he had known, I think it completely disrespectful, not something you ever make a joke of.
Yeah, yeah.
Crosses a line. If he didn't know, it kind of changes it slightly. But when Will then goes up, slaps him, and kind of then walks back to his chair, even the expression on his face, where there was like a little bit of a smile, you can see why so many people didn't know if it was real or not.
Yeah.
It was kind of the tone and almost aggression in his voice when he was screaming back. But I mean, there's so many things that's sad about it. But I mean, Will's clearly an incredible actor. What an amazing career he's had. And his first ever Oscar. I mean, it's just completely overshadowed it. And also, I feel sad for the... And this is going to be really bad. I don't even know what film Chris was now giving the award to. Because no one's talking about that. So yeah, I feel sorry for cast and crew of the show or the film that had won that Oscar, because no one's ever mentioned it. I think that whole night will always be the Will thing. And I don't think people are going to stop talking about it for a little while. I know he's come out and apologised, I think, late last night.
Yeah.
A statement was put out. But, incredibly sad in all senses, because, I mean, sad just for so many people. And just seems so out of character for him. I mean, not that I personally know him, but you just don't expect it.
No, yeah, I think that's definitely part of one of the reasons why most people are really surprised. They've always been quite an open couple, talking about their, you know, slightly unusual marriage and all of that sort of stuff, which is, you know, good, because the more people talk about it, the more accepted these things are. But, like, yeah, I think part of the reason why everyone was so shocked is because it was him. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, it really did overshadow everything else that happened that night. I feel also... It must be quite weird for Will as well, because, like, everyone does things in their life that they regret, right? But it's not in front of
the website.
A billion people. And I think, like, he will know. I think that's probably what pushed him to apologise to Chris, because it didn't seem like he was going to initially. He will know now that that's what he's going to be remembered for, and probably not his Oscar, which is not when you go to that event, how you want the night to go, right?
No. And you can imagine, like, when he opened his eyes the next morning, just the regret of that. Just,
it's a bit Kanye and Taylor, isn't it? Like we've talked about before, like that going up on the stage and...
Yeah, and the irony is, we was only talking last week about how the Oscars had... basically said to Kanye, allegedly, like, don't come.
Oh, the Grammys, I think.
Oh, that was it?
I know exactly what you mean. Like, yeah, it's because they didn't want the drama, but then turns out the Oscars had all the drama. Yeah. I feel sorry for everyone involved, really. What a disappointment for them all.
Yeah. Just overshadowed the whole night, really. I still can't kind of get my head around it. Do you know what I mean? But I'd be interested to see, because obviously his wife does the famous Red Table Talks, doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if she'll address it. I know she's put
good point
something up on social media. She hasn't captioned it, but there's a poster. I think it says something like something about healing.
Right, interesting. Yeah,
well, yeah, but no caption, that to be done. Just like a quote.
Yeah,
I'm sure she'll speak about it, and maybe we will in time. And the story will probably go on for a little bit longer.
Yeah, have to keep an eye out. There was another little bit of showbiz news I wanted to mention, which was very sad for Strictly fans: the departure of Ali Ash. As a professional. So first of all, obviously Jeanette left last year to present It Takes Two. Then OT announced she was leaving, and now Jeanette's husband, Ali Ash, is out. Now, first of all, he's absolutely gorgeous. So, I mean, it's a real shame that he won't be on the screen, of course. But also, it seems like there's a lot of like stuff going on in Strictly this year, because there's also rumours that they might have to change their schedule because the World Cup is being played in the winter this year. And it looks increasingly likely that they're... Bruno Tognoli won't be coming back, Anton Tibet will be a permanent replacement on the judging panel. So it seems like this year's Strictly, although we're quite far off it even being like officially like beginning, you know, months and months off, seems like there's quite a lot of drama going on.
Yeah, it's definitely seems like there's a lot of change going on over there. And I think it become one of like the really established arts where we've been there for so long.
Yeah, 9 years.
9 years, it's a long time. And I do think a shame for the show that they are losing some of the bigger names of the professionals.
Mm.
Has he said why he wants to leave?
No, he said he decided last year that 2021 would be his last series, but obviously they don't make official announcements until around this time when they start to firm up who the professional dancers will be and who's coming back and who's leaving, obviously. I imagine, you know, with Jeanette doing so well presenting herself now, and also they quite often go and do tours and things, don't they? That Ali Ash will probably have some of those sort of plans coming up. So
and maybe it felt really different because obviously last year would have been the first year without Jeanette there as a dancer. She was obviously hosting the after show, wasn't she? Where they've always had each other, maybe that's changed it as well, because they would have had similar schedules if they both had a celeb that year, would both be on the same page training 10, 12 hours a day, whatever it is they do.
Good point.
Whereas I guess that's now changed because of her schedule and she's changed her job role. But yeah, good point. He does a lot of tours, don't they, and shows. So
sure, we'll still see him around and about. And they're such a popular couple. Yeah, me too. I need to make sure I'm definitely following him on Instagram, if not. Because at least get my Ali Ash feel. Well, very exciting. Our first guest, Pete Bennett, is here. So let's get him to talk about all things the Nam movie and what else he's up to.
Fab. Hello, Pete.
Hello, hi, Bobby. You are, man. Hello, right? How are you?
Really good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I'm all right, you know, yeah. I'm all right, yeah. Not too bad.
Yeah, we're just saying that the sun's gone. We had our 3 or 4 days of sun, didn't we?
No.
And now we have to remind ourselves it's still March, early April.
I know. Is it still March? No, it's not now, is it?
It is, sadly.
March?
No. Yeah, I think Friday, April the 1st. Have you been a busy boy, Pete?
Quick, mate! My life doesn't stop. I just literally run around all the time, just running from one place to the next, just trying to get everything sorted out. I think I'm probably live the most chaotic life out of everyone I know. It's just ridiculous. But I need to just sort my life.
It's exciting stuff, right? And obviously with the Nam movie, that's obviously like a really big deal. Like, tell us about how you got involved in this in the first place, because when I saw you were on the cast list, I was like, oh, what's happening here?
Well, I don't know how the hell I got into that film. I got an audition. She wanted people with Tourette's in it. So, you know, I mean, my agent said, hey, this might be good for you. I'm like, well, of course it is. It's someone, you know, they want someone with Tourette's in it. And I was like, all right, that sounds perfect. So, yeah, I went and got had an audition with in London. And, yeah, I had to go through the whole process. I didn't just get it, like, willy-nilly. I had to actually have a camera in front of me and, like, had a script, and I had to basically just swear at the camera. No, I'm really good at that, you know. And there was actually another man there, and he knew me, and he had Tourette's as well. But let's just say that I think my Tourette's was a little bit more affable. Let's just put it like that, because he had a way with words. He's a lovely guy, but he kept on saying he wanted to finger my dad. and I'm not sure that really went down well with Catherine Tate when it came down to the final audition. When I met her in London, because I got the second callback, he was there again, and you know, I went and I saw Catherine, and we went in there, and I got her up, and I went through, and we literally the audition was me and Catherine calling each other names. Literally, we just rinsed each other out, just like. You know, we went with the script a bit, but we imagined that we were in a lift together, and she was bouncing off my Tourette's because the Nan character loves to swear.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, my audition, I just called her all the names under the sun, and she called me lots of rude words as well. I went out there buzzing, you know, because she was like, "You're off the telly," and I was like, "You're actually starstruck with me."
Did she recognise you then?
She liked me. She actually knew me. She loved me from Big Brother, and I was really happy because I really liked her too. You know, I thought she was I'm a massive fan. But I was still worried. The other guy went in there, and I thought, "Oh my god, he's gonna get the part." You know, she's gonna love getting told that he wants to finger her dad, and I was like, "I'm actually." How am I going to get this part?
How can I compete with that?
So I went home feeling a little bit scared, you know, as you do in auditions, but no one be told, I actually got a call saying, "You got the part, Pete." And I was like, over the moon. So we went to Dublin, and there she was, dressing in the Nan costume. And it was the trippiest experience. Not the most trippy, you know.
Not truly trippy.
Yeah, very trippy. yeah, we did the whole part and it was great. But I have to warn you, but I had some sad news. The actual, this is gutting, right? Because like just before the film came out, we waited 2 years for it to come out in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
I got a very apologetic email from Catherine Tate saying, "Due to purely technical reasons, Pete, our scene in the lift together has been cut out and she's gutted."
Oh, like, that's a real shame.
Oh, no.
I'm like, no. So, yeah, a shame. I want to kill myself. I was so pissed off. But I took it on the chin, and, you know, it was so sweet that Catherine apologized herself in the email, and we've been, you know, chatting and that. And she said, "Please still come to the premiere." And I went to the premiere, and that video you saw of me with Catherine happened, and it was really fun and that. But yeah, I did watch the film, and I still think, yeah, it is a wicked film. I laughed my head off, and it's fine that bit is cut out because the pacing's really good, and you know, it works well as a film. I'm not worried. I had an amazing experience with Catherine, and she kind of, there's a little bit of inside information. Wink, wink. We might possibly be working on something in the future. Oh, what's going to happen? I don't know. She kind of did say, "Don't worry, Pete."
but the experience, was still good for you though, yeah?
Oh my God, yeah. That's one of the best experiences I've had, you know, working on a huge film like that with Nan dressed out like up in the costume, and it was fantastic. Yeah, it was another level of exciting. Yeah, it was really good. But yeah, who knows what's going to happen? And hopefully, yeah, fingers crossed that it ain't the end of me and Catherine Tate working together. So,
did you and Catherine go out in Dublin after for drinks after filming?
No. I didn't actually go back. No, I just ended up going back to the hotel after the final scene of us. She left, and we went back to the hotel. and I was just getting pissed with one of the extras. Yeah, nice. No, he wasn't. He's not an extra. Actually, he was actually. No, he's actually an actor. Sorry, no, he's not an extra.
clarify.
Yeah, kill me. But yeah, no. Yeah, Matt from Matt went straight to bed. I thought, oh, we'd hang out. You know, her nephew. I thought he'd come and hang out. And like, but he just went straight upstairs. I was like, no. He's obviously, you know, maybe a bit too famous for us little people.
Very professional.
Was you over there for long, Pete? How long did you go to Dublin for? It's meant to be an amazing place. I've never been.
It's lovely. It's just very, very, you know what? It's a nice, very, very pretty, a very pretty place. And yeah, I loved it. Yeah, it's really nice. I didn't get to see much, to be honest. I went to the place where we were filming and so I didn't see much, but I know that it was very pretty. It was very, very nicely, you know, it's very clean and tidy.
What can you ask for?
Yeah, at least you had a good experience.
Yeah, the best experience. It was a nice, lovely, honestly, I loved it. Because I do films already, you know, like independent stuff and independent sitcoms, whatever. But having that experience of being a Warner Brothers film, you know, wow. It's just another level. The amount of people that work on one scene, it's like the whole. There's about 100 people doing different things.
Yeah.
It's a real experience, you know. Yeah. So, yeah, it was an amazing experience.
What else have you been up to since? I know you came and speak to us a couple of years ago, but I can't. I wonder what you've been doing sort of the past year.
Oh well, in lockdown I got my band back together because Love Dogs is I've been gigging since I got out of lockdown. But me and my mate Gav, we decided to get our the band back together, and so he recorded all my tunes with his guitar, and like, you know, we put it together, and so I've been gigging since it came out. I did a few gigs in London and in Brighton, and yeah, we're smashing it, and Love Dogs, that's great, and. We're going to release an album. So that's one thing I'm doing. The other, this is my life's mad. We got that thing going. I just edited the Green Fingers episode one again, because we ended up refilming it, because I said, let's refilm episode one, make it a really good pilot. So I did it. They said yes, Pete, because I edited all the other ones. So I ended up putting that on. So the first episode of Green Fingers is out now, remade, and it's plush and wicked. So check out that on Amazon. That's out there. So I've done that. So that now we've got, and I just filmed the Christmas special as well. And that's
March.
So we got I literally edited a whole bloody sitcom in lockdown. There's about 5 episodes and a remake. And then, but they let me off the last one. I said, like, I ain't doing any more. You went to Christmas special. I ain't doing it anymore. I need to get on my life. Anyway, I also filmed something called The Rise of Fizzy Pop, which is, if you go to my Instagram, the trailer's on there, and it's about a man who wants to become a rock star. And, and it's got a talking bearded dragon in it. Ross Lee's the fridge. I think Danny from Gogglebox. What's the name? I can't remember. I can't remember her name. Quick.
We'll find out.
Yeah, have a look. And Redneck, the massive drummer producer, he's now a filmmaker. So have a look on in Instagram. So I've got a couple of films out, I've got a bit of a sitcom going, I did a Catherine tape, got the band going. all I need now is a cup of tea and a biscuit, and I'll be all right.
Are you liking the editing side of things, Pete?
No, I hate it. editing literally it takes forever, and you got to concentrate, and you got to be stuck on the computer forever. And so I'm not that kind of person who can sit down for a long time. But I do. So lockdown really was great because I could just sit down and edit. But since lockdown, you know, we got out and I've had to edit. I literally took me months. What took me 2 weeks took me about 9 months instead. So in a way, lockdown helped me edit loads of things, get a band together, blah blah blah. So I like, you know, in a way, I liked lockdown. It was pretty fun. But now we're all let out of the cage. I'm like, it's much more harder to juggle And also we got to, like, you know, get the money in somehow. I've been doing a bit of labouring, you know, getting a bit buffed, you know what I mean? Just trying to survive and sort out other things that are like problems in my life, like bills and shit like that, you know what I mean?
So what with the acting and now the band, have you kind of consciously closed the door on reality TV, Pete? Obviously we all know and love you from Big Brother back in the day.
No, I'm up for anything, you know, but it's just whether or not people want to come and, you know, ask me to do anything, which they never really do. So I kind of just get on my own. I get on my own stuff now. I mean, if someone asked me to do something, I'd be up for it. And, you know, usually things do come on, opportunities do come on. But then suddenly they just, you know, just fall apart and it doesn't happen. A lot of things happen like that. You know, you get jobs from TV stuff, and then like the recent one was Steph's Pat Lunch. I was like, oh, I'm going to go make everyone some Pat Lunch. And then I was going to go on Monday. And then next thing you know, they've changed their mind. You know, that's what it's like in TV.
Yeah.
So I would love it if someone did come along and put me on something, you know. I think I've done a BBC 4 radio interview recently for all about Tourette syndrome and how it's a superpower, and, you know, it's quite a very Tourette syndrome positive. So
there's been quite a lot of that, like, you know, and you kind of were like a gateway for a lot of people who'd never maybe even heard of it before. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So do you feel that sometimes though? Do you know, because it was really important back in the day when you kind of came on TV.
I know, yeah, it was great. Yeah, I know, I was the gateway drug, you know what I mean? I've got every money for it now. So, yeah, so I think I need to get back out there as well, because between you and me and everyone else who's listening, I think Tourette's awareness needs another kick up the arse, you know what I mean? Needs to get out there again and stuff like that, because there's a lot of kids out there and mums and stuff who still message me to the day asking for help, because they're getting bullied again, whatever. And, you know, I think there needs to be another, well, if there is anyone out there who's going to be, you know, in the public eye with Tourette's, who's, you know, flying the flag, you know, it needs to be me, obviously, because I need to get back out there, man, you know what I mean? Because there's people who need help still, and the government need to, there's not much help for kids with Tourette's at the moment. We tried to get a petition signed by 100,000 signatures. It never happened, you know, and there's lots of kids really struggling. And you know what I mean? So I'd love to get back out there really and help and do what I can. And you know, in a way, me doing films and sitcoms and music and bands and whatever it is, and being creative, is part of my kind of awareness to show that even if you got Tourette's, you can still smash life and you can still have a great life and be successful, you know?
Yeah.
So it is all part of it, all part of my plan, you know what I mean?
Of course. And it's, and I don't mean to change the tone a bit, but it has been a year since we lost Nikki. I think it's around a year. And it's obviously that she was an important person in your life. How do you feel like sort of looking back?
You have no idea. I'm still quite trauma. I got quite traumatized by that. And like when I was filming Green Fingers, the episode, like I was saying, the first day I was filming, the second day, I got told about it, and I had no idea until, like, you know, just my director, who's the other guy, Belton, said, "Oh, Pete, are you going to be all right coming in tomorrow?" I was like, "Yeah, why? What's the matter?" And then he said, "Oh, you don't know." And I went, "What?" And then he told me, and I was like, I was so gutted. Like, literally, I was a bit, because at that time I had like this mad, like, trying to, when I went to go and see her, I thought to myself, this is going to help her. And, you know, the love, because, you know, I'm a Rex from Big Brother. And she's so sentimental, and it just meant to me, for me to go and see her. And, you know, I thought it would give her such a boost, a big morale boost. And, you know, and I got the picture up, and I put the link for everyone to see it and see, and to you know, I used my platform to try and boost it and get much money. And I did everything I could. But when I had my hopes up, and call me mad or whatever, but I was completely deluded that I thought she was going to survive, because I thought she was going to. I just had this kind of belief and hope, like blind faith, that she was going to survive. And I ended up being wrong.
Yeah, no, of course. But you know, you felt like you were doing the right thing, and she's much missed by many.
I know. I think about her a lot, and like, it's her birthday soon. I was 40 on the 22nd of March. She's going to be 40. Well, she's not. Well, she's going to be. And her best friend Carly Cunningham wrote to me recently and wished me happy birthday, which made me feel better. Call me mad, but I must be mad to think that I could have saved her. Because to be honest, lots of people would have done though, Pete.
Like, I mean, lots of people thought they could, and that's the problem with this disease. Having known myself, people that battle with it, it's very difficult to save people. It's a combination of things that need to happen, and I'm sorry that you feel like that, Pete. Honestly, at least you've got exciting things coming up with your music and all of that sort of stuff. So I'm glad to hear that things are going well for you.
Things are still hard. Life's still hard. I got a lot on my plate, but at least I'm staying as creative as I can. And I've started drawing, and I've started to get into my cartoons again and that as well. So I might
try. Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I love drawing. You want to see a picture?
Yes.
I want to start selling my pictures again.
That's a good idea.
Because I get a lot of people asking me for prints of my pictures, my drawings. But I haven't finished it yet, but there is one. See what I'm saying?
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
That is fantastic.
Well, I haven't finished it yet.
That's so good.
Because I haven't finished it. I've still got to do a little bit of filling in the gaps. I want to do burp.
I can gather that, yeah.
He's just burping.
That's brilliant, though, Pete. You're very talented.
Yeah, I'm a talented man. Well, that's the Tourette's, isn't it? The Tourette's makes me do lots of things, you know. So I've got music, I've got acting, I've got drawing, I've got my band, and I've got good in bed, you know. Hey,
that is a perfect note to end it on. Thank you so much for speaking to us this evening. Really appreciate it.
And best of luck
with what you've got coming up. Sounds like good times.
Yeah,
good times
are coming. Yeah, nice interview and hey, Bobby, you're looking buff, man. What's going on?
I've been training, Pete, since lockdown. I've got myself, well, I couldn't get in the gym, obviously, because we was in lockdown, but I started training when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it now.
No, it's good, isn't it? Yeah, man. You've got a hench, man.
Oh, thank you, Pete. It's so nice to see you and catch up with you.
Yeah. You too, man.
Hopefully see you soon. Hopefully our paths will cross.
Yeah, see you later. Lots of love. Bye.
Take care. Oh, he's such a ball of energy, isn't he? Wow. It's so good. And I mean, it's a shame to hear about what happened with Nicky, but you know, he does have a lot of exciting things going on. So that's good. Good for him.
And them drawings really are incredible.
Yeah. He's a good artist. Wow. I mean, yeah, definitely should get selling them. I'm sure there'd be people keen to buy.
Absolutely.
Well, no time to waste, because our next guest, Jess Imbiazzi, is here. So let's get her in the room.
Hello.
Hello, Jess.
Hi, how are you?
How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Good, it's been so long. It's lovely to see your faces.
Yeah, it has. You're a regular on our show. You've come on quite a bit over the years, haven't you?
So I like it. It's great seeing your faces. It's been so long as well. I feel like this is a little reunion.
Yeah, it's really sweet. How are you doing?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Just been filming, working hard, I started a podcast, so doing all these things. So just doing what I intrinsically value, and it feels very different, and it makes me feel like I'm in a very good place, so that's nice.
How was your holiday? I saw all your pictures on Instagram. It made me want to get on a plane, Jess.
Well, do you know, I haven't been away since, like, on a holiday that hasn't been work since 2017. So I'd finished filming something and I was just like, I'm gonna do a last minute break, and I did, and it was so nice just to relax. I kind of switched off from most things and just took that time to myself, and yeah, I really needed it, so I was really happy.
Where did you go?
Just to Tenerife. I thought it would be super sunny. it wasn't, but it
I've
was,
heard
it was
people made that mistake with Tenerife.
It was hot enough, and I didn't get a suntan, because turns out, I found out recently, I'm allergic to the sun. I got heat rash.
Oh, no.
It's very upsetting. Yes. So I'm going to take some antihistamines and go and try again.
I bet it was nice just to have the break, though, wasn't it? Just to have a little bit of downtime and chill out.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we'd had... Obviously, the lockdown was mental and I was bored out my brain, but I was always trying to do something. I was always trying to keep fit or write a book or write this and build a company. And I just kept myself going because I think I'd have lost my mind otherwise. And then once the lockdown finished, I kind of went into this year... with the horns, is that the right word? Ball with the horns, like, kind of thing.
You grab the ball by the horns.
I grabbed the ball by the horns. Well, no, wait, the horns. Whatever, I did that. And and I've been so busy this year, and I, you know, that's where I thrive. I can't sit around and do nothing. I struggle doing that. So it was fantastic for me. But at the same time, just having that tiny break to know that I can have a little brain rest before I go again, it was needed.
And was it a romantic holiday, Jess? I've seen the rumours that you might be dating Mr. Jermaine Pennant. Did he have a nice time in Tenerife?
You've asked that exceptionally well. Yeah, everyone had a nice time.
Good. Things going well.
Do you know what? It's just, I think I had so much, I think having a divorce go so public, I thought, you know, this is going to be different. I just want to focus on my career, focus on that. And that kind of how I kind of kept it. And I just want something for me now. I think, you know, when you've grown up with kind of having it all in the press, you kind of realise what's important to you and what's not. And then you stop listening to other people telling you what you need to do for your career and you take back your control. And I'm like, I know what I want, where my vision is going. And I want to try and keep it like that without all the outside noise, because when I managed to get rid of all that and pull myself away from it, I was happy. My anxiety left and all these other problems that come with it left. And I was left doing what I wanted to do. And that's become so important to me. And everything's going
basically
well.
Yes, it's fine. It's the answer.
Have you both kind of agreed that you want to keep it off social media and kind of keep it that bit private? Because sometimes there can be a pressure when you're in the public eye to show a relationship,
yeah,
isn't there?
I kind of feel like, because I don't really have that life anymore. I mean, I don't. My Instagram isn't really a thing for me. I have hundreds of thousands of, I mean, I've got a few thousand followers, but I mean, I don't have like millions and where everyone's interested in every single aspect of your life. It's kind of like, I don't even get that many story views, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like a small little community on there. So I don't... I'm happy going, like, when I've just been filming, I've gone to work, I've come home, cooked my dinner. I feel like I'm like my nan already. I'm in bed by 9 o'clock every night. And that's how I kind of like it. So I've been going to work, doing that. And it's kind of like pulled away from that. So it was not a discussion. It's just when something's flowing nicely, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah, absolutely, babe.
Well, and also you're talking interesting about like sort of doing things for your mental health. Isn't that kind of what you're discussing in your podcast?
Definitely, yeah, because that kind of came about because a producer of one of my new comedy shows called Keep Calm and Carry On, I filmed that last year with Harriet Thorpe from Ab Fab. So she plays my mum.
Oh, amazing.
And the producer of that, we really got on well, and we were discussing our childhoods and how things affect you and make you act in certain ways and how you behave. And when we both kind of came to the realization that we, once you understand yourself, you act from a very different place. We wanted to put it down in a podcast because for me, the mind is something that, you know, it literally went from my 20s, not understanding myself at all, getting drunk, doing what people told me I needed to do to have a career, or I was a nothing. And because I truly believed I was a nothing and I was never going anywhere, that I'd wasted, you know, my whole life at theatre school and then did nothing with it. I felt like I was just stuck in this hole and that was my life forever. Mm-hmm. But then I realised when I changed my mindset, you can put yourself to anything and you can give it a go. If you fail, you fail, but at least you tried. And that was kind of we wanted to get together and talk about this because there's so many people in that situation, so many people that I've spoken to that have said, you know, oh, well, I messed it up and I'm never going to go anywhere from here now. But that was my mindset. But I applied myself, did what I loved and got rid of the outside noise of people telling me what I should and shouldn't be doing and did it from my heart. And things really drastically changed around. And I think that when we do the pod, we're also speaking to guests coming on and kind of depicting their brain and getting onto an understanding of our own minds and other people's. When you all come together and you realise there's a community of people that we're all doing it, we're all struggling with our minds at some point, when we can sit and talk about it, it kind of gives you a fresh perspective and like a light bulb moment every time. Mm. And that's what the podcast is about. It's just, you know, two girls having a chat. They've both been through some traumas, bringing on guests that have had traumas and have made them act and behave in certain manners and just kind of helping other people through these conversations.
And now more than ever, I mean, like, some people that have never experienced mental health or anxiety or anything have during the last 2 years, what with the pandemic. And I think now more than ever, people are looking to speak out and have suffered. And I think that's going to, I think we'll see that for the next few years, the knock-on effect of COVID, just mental health alone.
I think it'll be a lifetime. Huge. It'll be a lifetime before we.
Yeah, and I think there's also the good to take out of it in the respects to when, I mean, I was really looking at myself previously before that, for the last 5-6 years, but the lockdown amplified everything. And that's why I think people that haven't really experienced mental health, or, you know, everyone has issues. We all have a problem in our life. It's how we deal with it. So if you've grown up with horrific trauma, like I witnessed as a child, you handle things differently to someone who hasn't done that. So your bumps in the road that may be minor to someone else are going to be absolutely horrendous to another person, because they can't handle it the way someone that hasn't had that can. So I think that it was lockdown that amplified these things. For people that would normally deal with something well, they had to now find new ways. So I think, I think that's just, and I think that would be ongoing. Now, like you said, I think it's just changed a lot of things around for a lot of people.
That's such an interesting point that you say about that, because I actually had this exact conversation with my sister. We were brought up in a fairly happy family, but our parents did get divorced when we were sort of 13, 14, 15. And I've always struggled with relationships. Like, I just struggle in them. I'm constantly thinking that, like, it's not going to work out and blah, blah. So I've never really had, the longest relationship I've had has been 18 months. So now I'm in my mid-30s. My sister went through almost the exact same experience that I did, but got married at 23 and has now got, like, 2 kids. Do you know what I mean? And they have a really happy, nice marriage. But we went through the same experience, but came out of it with completely different attitudes to the way we, like, looked at, like, relationships and marriage. And I think that's such a weird thing.
Yeah, because we're all so different. No matter, you can have the same upbringing, but our minds will be wired different ways. And our perspective, maybe, I mean, for instance, me growing up with domestic violence, my perspective of that is completely different to my mum's perspective of that. We're all going to have different views on how it happened and how it affected us. So for me, I'm the same as you. I struggle with relationships. I'm not very trusting. I think everyone's out to hurt me. I had to work on myself and understanding why I feel like that. I never had that protection when I was a kid. So for me, it was always trying to find someone to protect me, but then not trusting them to ever do that. So how is that going to work?
Yeah, so it's like you're constantly chasing your tail and never getting to the end point.
Well, exactly. Like. Yeah, and so for me, it was to find and identify these pieces of me that was causing this pattern. And you only can break a pattern whilst you're in the pattern. So as soon as you notice it, you have to do something differently. But that's where the hard part comes. People can't identify their patterns because they don't know they're in one. And how can you change something that you don't know?
So true. I love stuff like that.
I wanted to ask you, Bo, did you, and I mean, do you, I guess, or was it more in your own days, transitioning from reality TV into acting, do you feel that you was judged doing that? Did it kind of go against you?
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and this is why sometimes the press, it can be such a hard thing, and that's why I've said about trying to keep things separate, because people think I've just gone from reality to acting, but actually I went to Italia Conti Theatre School my whole life and was on a full scholarship. So actually I was an actress, dancer and a singer. I lost my way, fell into reality TV, got stuck in this, you know, soul-wrenching kind of cycle of trying to be relevant and getting my validation from other people because I couldn't validate myself. And then I managed to kind of work on myself and get that validation back to go back to where I wanted to be, and it's worked. But, you know, so it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's what people know, but they haven't seen the 15 years previous of that, of exceptional hard work. But if you don't love yourself and value yourself enough, how is anyone else going to do that either? Mm-hmm. So I feel like it does cause a challenge, and it has. And I've had a big kind of break on a series that I'm so grateful for that I've just finished filming. And I really had to work for that, but I had to kind of leave everything behind and strip back to being like, you're just an actress auditioning. You've just come out of theatre school, hit mindset, and you're back to auditioning. I stopped going to, you know, I didn't want to be around anything that was going to distract me from that. And I had to really apply. I had to go nearly broke to do it. And I did. But when, like I said, if you believe in yourself enough, you only do it. it was authentic. I'm living that life. I'm doing it. So if people then see that, they can't go against it and say, oh, you're just this, because I'm not just that. I'm not doing that at all.
Yeah. So, and you can't act, right? That's like, well, you know, you do actually know your stuff about it. Tell us a bit about this BBC series you've been involved with.
Yeah. So it's, I'm in the contract. I'm not allowed to say anything, but I know that people know that I'm in it. So I can't tell my character, blah, 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 but it's the Strike series on BBC. Written by Robert Galbraith, which is actually J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, the male.
So, yeah, the counterpart. So, yeah, I've been doing that. And, you know, I just learned so much. I was so focused and dedicated when I was there. I'm just there and I'm walking up every minute and learning as much as I can. I'm going to take that on to my next job and my next job. And, yeah, I just never want to stop. That's what I want to do. I want to make people feel. Because when I was a kid and there was bad things going on as a child, watching a film or reading a book or even watching inspirational things on YouTube, for instance, it gives me a feel to me, I can do that too. And I want people to have that. I want people to want that as well.
Absolutely. And the thing is as well, you see me in such a good place. Like you say, when things are right and you're in the right place, I'm a big believer, what's meant for you won't pass you by. And a lot of life is all about timing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know what, like, if I'd have been given this opportunity with this series in my early 20s, I'd have ruined it. I didn't know who I was. I was completely and utterly in the depths of depression and anxieties and people pleasing and doing what everyone around me said. And if I'd have got this then, it would have been to show people that I've done it and I was getting a validation from it. Whereas now it's just mine. It's I go to work, I come home, and I just live this lovely little life by myself. And that is exactly what I needed. So you're exactly on the money there when you say the right timing. Because I'd have ruined this 10 years ago. But now I'm so focused and dedicated that nothing's going to ruin this for me.
You mentioned your depression and anxiety. How are you now with it? Do you kind of have it managed to a level that you're okay?
Yeah, of course. I mean, like I said, I think what the thing I've learned is life is like you're on a surfboard. And you're standing on this surfboard, and when you haven't kind of figured out your mind and you're still a bit, you know, and you're in depth of depression or anxiety and you fall off, you're drowning and you can't know how to get out of it. Life is always going to be waves. So you need to learn to ride them. So it's about, you can fall off your surfboard, but you have your life jacket on now. And that's how I kind of feel. So when I fall off, I'm still got my buoyancy. I'm not going to go under. You know, and I think, you know, there's things that will cause anxiety. You know, every single day, there's not going to be one person in this life that goes through their whole entire life without a bump in the road. There's always going to be a bump, whether you can't get your mortgage, whether your boyfriend breaks up with you, whether you have an accident and you lose a leg. There's always going to be something that comes along. But it's about taking responsibility for those things that happen and then being able to use your tools that you've mastered throughout your life to make sure you stay afloat.
And how did you learn that? Is that like something you learned in like therapy or just like self-learn or what?
It's kind of a lot of things. I do see a therapist. Yeah, I find that very helpful to talk things out. I don't so much anymore, but, you know, I did for a while just to talk things out. But also, weirdly, when I was a kid, I didn't stop reading. I read and read and read and read. When I kind of got older and the depression stuck in, I didn't read a book at all. And about 5 years ago, I think just before my divorce happened, I was reading again. And then I found that it just almost connected me back to myself. Mm. So I would find books that I knew would resonate with me. And what I find the best therapy is people that have been through something similar. And then you read their account on it and how they managed to master it. And you can take whatever you need from all these different people and build your own version of it. And I feel like that's what I've done. I've spoke to a therapist, but I'm very, very on it with mindset and self-help because I never want to feel like I used to. So I'll always find things that I know are going to nourish my brain rather than, you know, make it worse.
And is that one of the reasons why you don't, where you kind of come away from social media, do you think? Because it doesn't help you with that?
Yeah, I just think, you know, I got so obsessed with social media at one point, especially when I was doing the reality. It was my validation. And then I thought, why on earth am I not validating myself? Why am I letting strangers that I don't know give me validation? It started to make no sense to me. And then I would look at myself and I would go, I'm about to post a sexy picture or something. And then I'll be like, hang on a minute, I'm doing that because I'm feeling insecure about something else. I'm not going to post it. I'm going to sit and work and talk to myself and figure out why I'm feeling insecure right now and fix that rather than having to act out on social media. Mm. And that's what I feel like a lot of the problem is, where, you know, we're filtering our faces to the point where people can't even recognize you on the street if they saw you. We're, and it's all because of, we're not loving ourselves enough and not being just happy with who we are, because we're watching so many other people do the same. And it's creating this culture of just self-loathing, and that's why I kind of pulled away from it. I don't like to post as much as I did. I mean, during the lockdown I was on it quite a lot, and it was then when I realized what I was doing. When I was feeling a bit of a type of way, I was using social media to try and validate that feeling, and then I was like, no, this isn't working for me. Mm. So it was an awareness of it, and that's why I kind of keep away from it now.
I think a lot of people put pressure on themselves because of social media. I know I've heard a lot of surgeons have come out and said people bring their filtered and their edited photos from Instagram to a surgeon and say, make me look like that, because people, whether they feel there's a pressure or they're comparing themselves to people. And as we know, a lot of things on social media just aren't real. People just show the best side of things and an over-exaggerated side. But I find it so sad when some people don't feel good enough in themselves because they don't like how they really look. They're used to seeing a filter on themselves. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, and to go to a surgeon and say, make me look like this edited thing, it kind of shows you where people are at now.
It makes me sad because I've been that girl. When I was in my early mid-20s, I hated myself, and I didn't even realize I hated myself. I didn't like how I looked. I was always insecure for that very reason. And I think social media ramps that up for people, and you know, it's a sad thing. I don't know how to fix it. And normally when I'm doing, you know, my podcast, or if I'm reading books, I'm always thinking of a solution. I never think of a block in the road. I'll always think of a solution. But this one I struggle with, because I feel sad for the younger generations that don't like their faces. They will not post a picture up, or even, you know, women my age are posting pictures and their face is completely different from a filter. You wouldn't even recognize them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, who's responsible for making people love themselves again? I mean, it's a dangerous thing. People are, you know, getting so insecure. They're acting out of character, and it's all because of this app that is completely changing faces. And I don't think they should be allowed, but they are. And I, you know, it's not for me to change laws or rules, but I think it's quite dangerous having such a huge amount of people disliking themselves enough that they can't post a real picture of themselves. I'm all about posting a good picture. I'm not going to post my ugliest one up, am I? But as long as it's me, there, yeah, that's yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really interesting point, and one I hadn't really thought of. But yeah, I mean, yeah, wow. It's an interesting topic of debate. What, remind me, what's the name of your podcast?
It is called Let's Clear the Air with Jess and Kaylee.
Easy enough to remember. Perfect. Jess, thank you so much for joining us this evening. As ever, a pleasure to have you on. And best of luck with all these exciting things you've got going on.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to see you both.
You too.
You too, Jess. Take care.
Lots of love.
Bye, babes.
Bye. What a lovely girl. I mean, she's always so nice to have on, and she's always such like a positive energy, I think.
Got a good head on her shoulders, as Jess.
100%. Another lovely show covering. I feel like we cover a lot of mental health stuff, don't we?
We do, babes.
Something we end up talking about quite a lot every week. Maybe
and I think that's a really amazing thing, actually, that we do touch upon it weekly, because so many people, as we've just said, are in a situation where they're struggling or suffering or just living with. And yeah, the more people talk, it helps.
More normalizes it. Well, lovely to see you. And thanks everyone for listening. Until next week, goodbye.
Bye, guys.